We sailed from England late in the evening of June the 4th, as D-Day was to be June the 5th, and during the night we received word it was pre-arranged if there was to be a change, that the channel was too rough and for us to turn around and come back to England, which we did. And we came back to England, and then we left again the next day for the invasion. And this time we really had to do it because it would be the last day in which we would have the proper sun and tide. The channel was rougher as all heck, and we had one heck of a time. There was really no place to rest or sleep on the craft. I remember getting up on top of the hood of a truck and tried to sleep. A lot of the fellows were smoking and talking, and some were nervous, some were praying. Early in the morning, it must have been about 3, maybe earlier than that, that they wanted all of us to come up and they were going to serve breakfast. And I can still remember that breakfast with great big pancakes. I think they wanted us to sink. They were something. And as they called your name, you went over the side on Jacob's ladder into the landing craft. And I remember when they called my name, and I went down on the Jacob's ladder, it was real rough, and they kept knocking me against the ship, and I remember falling the last few feet into the craft. And of course, I forgot to tell you that we thought that we were going to be gassed, so we all wore coveralls, impregnated coveralls, over all of our uniform, and we were dressed in heavy wool because it was cold at that time. So we did with all the equipment that you carried and all. I think I had more on my back than I weighed at that time. Before we went over and got into the landing craft, our doctor gave us all seasick pills. He said these would keep us from getting seasick. But I think they were more than a seasick pill, because from then on, I didn't get seasick, but I still was able to think good. But I wasn't scared. I really didn't get scared until late that night, which I'll tell about that later. Today is Independence Day, 1996. And as I start to dictate to the record, my memory goes back to July the 4th, 1944. An order from Corps headquarters went out, and it stated at 1200 hours on the 4th of July, under previous arrangements, all active artillery pieces on the 1st U.S. Army front fired one round on a chosen target in celebration of Independence Day. The British 50th Division on 5th Corps left joined in the gigantic salute as a gesture of honor to the fighting U.S. Army. I am reading this from the Corps history book. This was quite a celebration. Now I'll go back to the invasion. Before we boarded our LCIs, the Navy started to fire on the coast of France, and it was still very dark. We could see the fire, those shells going across to the beach. And they kept this up for quite a long time, way before we started to load. And of course, as the first wave started to get close to the beach, they ceased firing. When we arrived near the beach, we were supposed to be there each hour plus 3. That would be 3 hours after land, the original assault force. We were signaled by the beach commander to get back out of range and stay out until called, because the first wave was still on the beach. They had not cleared the beach yet. So we had a British coxswain, and our British were on our left, so he took us up, and we watched the British fight And then we'd come back and see what was going on with Americans. And then we'd go back and forth, and we kept that up. I'm not sure exactly the time. I know it was after in the afternoon sometime. A long time ago, I thought it was around 1 o'clock, but I found out it was later. So when they finally called for us to move in, before they called us, we were watching what was going on, and they brought a big they killed the gun on the right, and there was a gun emplacement on the left up in the cliff, and it was still firing on the beach. And so they brought a destroyer in real close to the beach, and was broadside, and with those big guns, it started firing on the cliff, and you can watch the cliff just fall apart, just like sand falling apart. And as soon as they silenced that, you could see the GIs go up over the top of the hill. So then they'd wait for us to start to come in. There was a LCI ahead of us, and as he got to the beach to start to lower the deck to let the men out, he caught an 88 shell, and so our coxswain, he immediately stopped and threw open the deck and told his out boys, and we all went into the water. I was up to my neck in the water, and as we were going in, the engineers were still trying to remove the underwater obstacles, and they were setting off charges, blowing them up, and spray was going up in the air, and we all wore a little patch on our shoulders. In case it was gas, it would turn red, and the spray must have set it off on someone's shoulder, and he got excited and started yelling gas, that everybody was fighting for, trying to get a gas mask on, but soon we found out that there was not any gas. And so I remember knowing how that beach was made, that there was a big concrete wall at the back of that beach after working on a train model, and I made up my mind to get down and crawl like a little rat. And when we got to the wall, there was a number of wounded men waiting to be transported back to England or for medics to take care of them. And of course, our job was not to stop, and the MPs were pushing us to get out, and myself, the other two officers, and our enlisted men, and then we started making our ways. The engineers had cleared a path where there were no mines, and we made our way up through the top of the hill. We got to the top of the hill, and there was a fire trench that the Germans had built, or dug, I should say. So we all got into that, and that's where we spent the afternoon. At that time, the infantry was two hedgerows ahead of us. That was the front line, and they were fighting for inches that whole afternoon, and they had one heck of a time. We did not make our D-Day objective. I doubt if we had over a mile and a half into France at that time, by nightfall, and we were supposed to tie in with the British on our left. We did not. We were supposed to tie in on the right with the of course, on the right was the 1st Division. They were there. But on the other side of that, we were supposed to tie in with the Rangers, who were at Pointe du Hoc. We didn't tie in with them, so we just had a small little area of ground that we owned. And later on, about 7 o'clock in the evening, the General Giraud and the rest of his staff, which was my Colonel Louis C. Patillo, they came ashore, and then we spent the night in this trench. And I remember, I was sitting upright with my back against the colonel's back to keep warm. And finally, after a while, he got up and he called me Manna. He says, Manna, he's going down to the beach and see if he can help out down there. I told him, good. I wasn't going after. I was staying right down in that trench because we didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know whether we were going to be evacuated or whether there'd be such an onslaught from the German that we would all be captured. We didn't know what was going to happen that night.